What's up, everybody? Welcome to Cairo Nights. It's a Tuesday evening, May the 26th, 2020. My name is Aaron Mace, and you can call me Mace if you like, here with Mike Lewis. And of course, all night long, Frank Shires is going to be here. He's going to give you the news at the top and bottom of the hour. And DB, David Burbank, a.k.a. D Money, a.k.a. D Bank, is on the ones and twos. And the bell. And the bell of approval. Always nice when I hear it. It's like Pavlovian at this point. I hear the bell and I'm like, I did good. I did good. I get a cookie. How was everyone's Memorial Day? Was it pretty standard? Were you guys here? Working
yes.
like huge? I know, Mike, you and I were filling in on different shows.
You guys were not here last night.
No.
We were here yesterday, but not last night.
Yeah.
D-Bank was in charge of the world.
Yeah?
He did. He ran everything.
What an easy world it was, too. I just sort of let CBS do their thing, and it was very nice and fun.
And I slept worked hard on news out in the newsroom.
You didn't get drunk with power, DB, just immediately? Start changing all the rules?
Not with power. No, I'm just joking. I would never drink at work. Never, ever.
Of course. Of course. Of course he would. DB's an upstanding young gentleman.
He is.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. 98973 is the State Roofing text line, if you want to be a part of the conversation. That's a great way to do it. I know Mike worked with my old cohort, G, on the G and Ursula show.
I did indeed.
Was that fun?
Yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah, it's always good hanging out.
It's always weird because on the shows, on this show, for example, you and I are sitting in the room together at, you know, marginally appropriate distance.
Mm-hmm.
But G is working from home.
Yes.
And a lot of hosts here are working from home. And it's always weird to be in the studio talking to somebody who's not in the same room with you. You have to do these extended pauses when you're done.
Yeah, right. Or
like
yeah,
that.
Or you work up your voice and you say like this, and that's the end of my sentence.
Right.
So people get the cue. I was up filling in for Dave Ross super early in the morning. Woke up at 3 a.m., which for the record is about when I go to bed. So that was a treat, but got to see Colleen O'Brien and James Ranishevitz and the whole crew. They're great, great folks. All up and down the dial on Cairo Radio. I really do enjoy the people that I get to work with, and I feel very privileged to work with all of them. And all right, speaking of work, let's get to it.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
Health officials here in Washington State are becoming increasingly concerned about children in our state receiving proper vaccinations during the coronavirus pandemic. Parents are staying away from hospitals. They're concerned about the health of their small kids. And according to the Washington State Department of Health, this has been an issue throughout the entirety of the pandemic. About 30% fewer children were vaccinated in March and about 40% fewer in April. That's compared to the average number of childhood vaccinations admitted during those months between 2015 and 2019, according to the Department of Health. Governor Inslee warned families a couple weeks ago.
We can't let one virus result in fewer children being protected against other very dangerous diseases, and I hope people will take care of their children.
Health officials are particularly concerned with two diseases that children are especially susceptible to, measles and pertussis. That's commonly known as whooping cough. Kent pediatrician Dr. Tom Courtney told Cairo Radio.
The vaccine question is probably first and foremost. We don't want to have an epidemic of measles or pertussis or meningitis or a lot of the other common things that we immunize against.
Hospitals and clinics have been taking every possible precaution, hoping to make the safest environment for children and other patients, of course. Dr. Courtney even mentioned a virtual waiting room to help with social distancing.
We've done the social distancing at the front desk, trying to make sure you're at least 6 feet away. And we've talked about, if need be, having people have a virtual waiting room where you sit in the parking lot in your warm car and, you know, away from other folks so you're not sitting in a waiting room.
It's kind of like how Rachel did when she went to the dentist last week. The concern from health experts comes on the tails of a measles outbreak in Clark County last year. If you remember that, it sickened over 70 people. Plus, the lack of vaccinations is not just taking place here in Washington. According to the CDC, orders for pediatric vaccines have dropped since late January, and fewer doses have been administered in the United States than had been by this time last year.
Number two.
The coronavirus death toll in the United States today surpassed 100,000 people. According to NBC News, the statewide death tolls are maxed out at around 30,000 in New York, with New Jersey following in at roughly 11,000 deaths. White House Press Secretary Kylie McEnany asked today about the death toll and took the opportunity to praise how President Trump had approached the economy during the pandemic.
There are a litany of results when you close down an economy, but closing down the economy for this amount of time kept us far below the 2.2 million number. As we start to reopen, we keep in mind the people who are missing their screening appointments, the people who are succumbing to suicide and drug overdose because of economic hardship. This president made the right choice. It was a delicate balance, and he did it exactly as he should, guided by data, and we are far below 2.2 million dead Americans because of the actions of President Trump.
One data point suggests that the U.S. is gradually fighting back against the virus. One country whose death rate is not slowing down is Brazil. In fact, for the first time today, Brazil had a higher death toll from coronavirus in the last 24 hours than the U.S. did. Brazilian officials registered 870 deaths from the virus today, with the U.S. only registering 620. NBC's Bill Neely had more details.
On Brazil's front line, the casualties are mounting horrifically. Tens of thousands of new cases every day. The death toll is doubling so fast they can't dig the graves quickly enough. Most people don't wear masks, they can't get them. They've lost jobs, so they're fed by aid groups. In the center of Brazil's richest city, the newly jobless line up for food. Their president announced billions in aid, but he wants lockdowns to end and Brazil to get back to work. At a soccer stadium, a new field hospital, ready for the next wave. Brazil, say experts, still weeks away from its peak of infections.
The death toll in Brazil is still only about one quarter of America's 100,000 people. The U.S. also remains the most infectious country in the world, with over 1.6 million positive cases of the virus reported.
There's something about those British reporters that it just sounds like the end of the literal world, no matter what they're reporting. Now, the data is not kind. It's pretty scary, to be sure. I worry about the numbers going back up. I do. We've seen stories. We're not really going to talk a whole lot about it tonight, except for right now. But we've seen stories where they're talking about how, yeah, we're starting to see more. And I just... Mike, I just don't know what to think anymore. I hear so much different information come from so many different places and so many different people. This isn't an issue. This is an issue. We should care about this. We shouldn't care about that. That I just have to put my hands up and go, well, I'm going to default to my default, which is be conservative, follow the rules, and do what the science tells me.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a wise approach. I would also say, though, that It's a fluid situation. So so we have to be able to be doing one thing today, incorporate the data, and do something tomorrow, which is why you would flex either toward opening or toward closing. The nice thing is that we have tested a whole bunch of things. We know that the distancing at least appears to, from a data standpoint, appears to help. But we also know that there are areas where it's starting to flatten a bit. So we can adjust what we're doing in those areas potentially. And if it doesn't work, then we adjust back. But now at least we've got a toolkit now. Mm-hmm. And the toolkit, while it's not filled with enough testing, it is filled with other things that we can do in lieu of testing. And so my hope is that we can flex both directions depending on what the data tells us, and then keep iterating and keep reacting to that data as it becomes new, as we influence it, right? In this situation, that's all you can do is stay flexible.
Yeah, well said.
Number three.
Scientists across the world have been looking for new insights into the infection rates of COVID-19, that data we were just talking about, and it seems like the answer may be in an unexpected place. Experts known as wastewater epidemiologists study how our sewage, our waste, is saying that COVID-19 can be found in our wastewater and that finding it helps us monitor how many are being infected by the virus. Davy Jones, not that Davy Jones, he's a professor of environmental science at Britain's Bangor University. He claims that while many particles of the virus are undetectable through droplets from the lungs, there are a large number that can be found in human waste. ABC 10 spoke to Peter Van Rye, a waste management director in Colorado, about how his wastewater plant has begun testing for the virus.
It was absolutely fascinating to me. I did not make the connection between the pandemic and the work we do at a wastewater facility, but I'm glad we found the connection.
I love this guy. Van Rye, he's excited to be a part of this new method.
It's interesting to be able to test it from a different angle. I didn't think we were going to have an integral part in trying to establish where the virus might be within our community.
ABC 10 also spoke to wastewater epidemiologist Dr. Mariana Matas and hope that the data that scientists like her are gathering can help mitigate the outbreak.
We believe that the main use of the data in the immediate future will be to understand the impact of these policy decisions, which is going to be balancing the mitigation, the social distancing to keep the outbreak low, but also enabling the economy to operate to some level.
Dr. Mattis expressed that she just wants the data out there available to the folks who are making the policies.
We want to make this a tool where our leaders, really the people making those policy decisions have the best data available and can quickly react to our new reality.
With many countries being unable to test a large number of the population manually, testing wastewater could be a new breakthrough in how we are able to track infections, and hopefully it will give us an idea as to when we're through this pandemic. There have been a bunch of stories that I've read over the years about testing wastewater and what it can tell you about the types of drugs, both prescription and illegal, people are taking. I know that folks use it to determine, like, well, meth is really hot right now. You know, everybody seems to be on this thing or that thing or the other thing. It's fascinating the answers you can get from number two.
Well, yeah. So the Washington Post interviewed a guy named David Hirschberg. He is a founder of a nonprofit biotech. He's also a professor at the University of Washington in Tacoma. And he essentially studies human waste all the time and refers to it as, he says, S is a great source of information. And in fact, it is. There are any number of studies. I mean, a few years ago, I remember a really great one, because this is always what even archaeologists look for, where people went to the bathroom to find out, to learn, get clues about a civilization. It tells us a tremendous number of things. This was a study done on the New York wastewater treatment system. And one of the things they found out, in addition to, like, you know, booze levels and pathogen levels and things like that you would expect to find, one of the things that they found out was how often the vitamins you buy, and this is something for all of you who take a lot of vitamins, you might want to remember this, how often the vitamins you buy pass through your body completely unchanged. In other words, the binder that they use to get the minerals to sort of stay in pill form sometimes is so strong that you pass that vitamin without having absorbed any of it. And they found literally millions and millions of completely whole, unchanged vitamins in the New York City wastewater system, because the problem was that people were, you know, unfortunately not processing those vitamins at all, which one would assume should inspire, you know, liquid vitamin or powder vitamin or some sort of vitamin intake different from a solid pill.
It's like little rocks just passing through our system.
No, precisely. Precisely. So this study,
give me a Flintstone.
This study is going to be interesting, and the nice thing about it is it gives us some real entry points into testing for the spread of it, because we've got everywhere where there's a big population, we've got a wastewater treatment plant.
Sure.
We literally can gather this data, and it's a central data location. Rather than going to each individual house or getting people to line up for testing, we can't track it individually, because you can't really test that in a wastewater treatment plant. What you can do is test the viral load in the waste stream and how infected your town is, which immediately means then you can start earmarking resources for that particular place. This is what they think is going to be if we can start developing that, and there's a whole host of things we can do that with. If we can start developing end of stream testing prior to the processing, prior to the effluent going out into a place like Elliott Bay, we can actually learn not just about this, but a whole bunch about our community. But also, we will be set up to be able to, when the next, you know, flu season rolls through, the next pathogen rolls through, the next sort of thing that we need to worry about at this scale rolls through, we'll be well situated to see, like, all right, it's showing up now. We may even be able to jump on things much earlier with this sort of testing in place at the wastewater treatment plants. I mean, it's easy to make fun of, because there are elements of it that are a little bit funny or a little bit odd.
Uh-huh.
But the fact is, it is really, it's going to be, you know, for lack of a better term, a gold mine.
Yeah, there is some incredible science happening at wastewater treatment facilities. I didn't know, I got to be honest with you. This is one of those things that, you know, I don't really ever think about. Outside of maybe driving down the highway and passing a place where there is a waste treatment facility and noticing the odor, I mean, that's really the only thought I've basically put into this kind of thing. And how many other things out there do we just take for granted? I don't know how it works. We need to do a deep dive.
Well,
get somebody who works again, at one of these places.
Yeah, unusual choice terminology. I think that that's that. It, I think it's always. Ugh. I mean, really, it probably has always been obvious to you and everyone else. You know what happens if you have a one bathroom place and your toilet clogs. You're not doing anything until the toilet's fixed.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
you've got to actually solve that relatively quickly. If you are out camping, that's one of the things. You're in your tent. It's warm. It's raining outside. The last thing you want to do is go out there and dig a hole somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think that people really are. You look at every major civilization treating waste. You look at a dairy farm. Treating waste is always the number one thing you need to worry about because you're producing so much of it and you can't live with it around you.
Yeah.
You can't. You have to move it away somewhere, hopefully in a treatable fashion somewhere. And so this actually underscores the importance of wastewater treatment plants and how we don't spend enough time. And the one, you know, out at the lighthouse... which has had some problems and has not really lived up to its billing.
Huh.
I mean, one would hope that maybe something like this would inspire cities to put a little bit more municipal money into upgrading the quality of this and actually adding some capacity so we could be able to, you know, test for things as they move through our cities, unfortunately.
Guys, we have a lot of show tonight. We have a lot of show. At 8 o'clock, Jim Brunner from the Seattle Times, he's going to come in. He and two other reporters wrote a fantastic article, a big story about that Nigerian fraud ring, Scattered Canary, that are scamming our state's unemployment system, us and some other states. But we seem to have taken the worst of it. And Rachel Bell, she comes up next. She's talking about pandemic proms. It's coming up. Kyra Knights. Golden gal Rachel Bell.
I like how you make me sound like a squirrel.
A squirrel?
Yeah.
You got squirrel vibes.
I like squirrels.
Squirrels are cute. You have high energy. I know how you bury things in your yard.
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I read this really great article about squirrels. I think it was last year. And then, like, would not stop telling people about it. It was, you know, you get your one story and you're like, this is my new cocktail party story. And it was like, when you see a squirrel holding the nut and shaking its little head, he's weighing the nut to see how big the nut is inside.
Really?
To decide, should I eat it now or should I save it for later?
Really?
Yeah.
So which direction does he go? Does he save the big one for later or eats it now?
I think he eats the little one and he saves the big one.
Really?
The most interesting thing, though, it said there was only two or three animals that do this. There's a season where they hide all their nuts before winter,
mm-hmm.
and their brain actually gets bigger because it's when they do all their thinking, because what they do is they bury them all around and then every day they go back to every hiding spot in order that they buried them to be like, still there, check, check, check. And then their brain shrinks back down for the rest of the year.
Really?
Which also apparently, because I don't know why I'm like you, I like stories about squirrels. I befriended a couple of squirrels when I first moved to Texas. I didn't have any friends. And then we had a pretty nasty breakup. But aside from that, they also... People think that they're very, very good about finding their hidden nuts, and they are actually not. They lose them like crazy.
Yeah.
The same way you do in the basement or the attic or somewhere in your house, you can.
How
squirrels are very much like that. That's why they have to bury so many. So inadvertently, they'll find their food.
They're playing the numbers game.
Exactly. I feel like they're so underrated because you see them all the time, like pigeons. People are like, oh, another squirrel. But like... They're adorable.
They are.
If you never saw them before, they're so cute.
They're cute.
I like a pigeon, too. That iridescent color. Wow.
Look at you.
You are so
Rachel, defending the defense.
Easily pleased. And you actually hike. This is funny.
You should see when I see a chipmunk. That's a big occasion. Okay, we're going to talk about the pandemic prom. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal. This whole story just, ugh. They're talking about, you know, students having proms at home because they can't go and do it at school this year.
Yeah.
Every story sounds more depressing than the last. These are the worst. Like, don't even do it. These are terrible.
Ugh.
So the worst one of all, I'll just start with the worst, is where this mom, a stay-at-home mom, this is like all these, you know, that it's just the parents who want their kids to do this. The prom was canceled. So she says, oh, I'm going to plan a prom at home, but no friends over. She got dressed up in a fancy dress. She has her son wearing the tuxedo, and she made a sign that said COVID prom with mom. She hung the banner and twinkly lights. They ordered in sushi, and they had a great night. She got to he got to drive his dad's Corvette for the first time.
All right.
Which, like, call it what it is, like a nice family night, but like nobody wants to go to prom with their mom.
Yeah. No. I get the impetus behind it, right? I get that. Like, prom was fine. I had a good time. I went to a couple proms, and it was always a good time. I got to drive my Aunt Lorraine's new Mustang.
Ooh.
At the time. That was pretty awesome. But if you
did, your mom have a good time?
Oh, yeah. She was great. Everybody loves Joanne. She's, it was a trip. I did take my mom 4 years.
We dated for a while.
Yeah, it was cool. It didn't work out. Yeah. We were too similar. But the idea, if you can't do it, right, then just don't try. I'm not sure there's a decent middle ground, at least not that I've heard yet.
No. So one of the other ones in Florida, they had a drive-by prom parade where they decorated the parking lot with balloons, and then the kids got to drive through, and when they stopped at a cone, there were six cones. One of them was you could have a cupcake. One of them was taking photos that were COVID-themed with toilet paper and Lysol. They had music playing in the parking lot. It's just dumb. Like, that's not the prom. Like, the kids don't want to go just to do something and call it prom. You want to be in a big room.
Right.
And, like, this New York Times article I read, the reasons they want to go is, like, the kids who go to an all-girls or all-boys school, they just want to be around the other sex.
Yep.
Some kids really want to be prom king or prom queen.
Yep.
It's the last time to get dressed up, you know, with your friends, which maybe ever, like, depending on the lifestyle you lead, you may never again.
Or if you move to Seattle.
Exactly.
Right. Then it's jeans to the opera, baby.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. Between high school and going to the James Beard Awards, I never wore a formal outfit.
Oh, no. Like, that's it.
What would be the reason? And then the other thing is, like, kids watching in movies their whole lives, and you're excited because you've seen this in a movie. So, yeah, I just think that these are all, I mean, some of them are like having a Zoom prom. That's not a prom. That's just talking on Zoom in a dress.
Yeah, that's.
And a tuxedo.
That's a fancy webcam.
Yeah.
It's
kind of sad.
But what about the other side of this?
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is going to sound like a dumb story, and I did go to prom. I did go to prom. So this is not coming from a guy.
Mike's breaking news.
Like, well, no.
Sour grapes.
I am just saying, you're going to think, oh, that's a guy who didn't go to prom. I did. And my prom date is currently my sister-in-law. But,
really?
Oh.
Scandal.
I wish it were more of a scandal, actually. Yeah. You know, it actually turned out great for everyone.
Your brother's a great guy.
My brother is a fantastic guy. But what about the kids who actually, like, because there was a whole group of kids I know in my school who had, like, their stomach was in knots about the prom because they didn't have someone to go with, and they really got uncomfortable in that environment and all that. And I know we're all doing these things that are these big markers for kids, graduation and prom and whatnot, but I got to tell you, at every high school, there is a significant number of kids who are really relieved, and especially when it came to all the money that people end up spending and all
God.
The status anxiety you get in an environment like that. And I'm not, again, went to prom, had a good time, make that clear, but I get why there would be a whole bunch of kids who are not being written about right now who are thrilled.
That's a good point. But, like, should things be canceled because of that? I mean, just in general, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I guess, like, the bootstraps people would say, well, that's life, you know? It's like, you're going to have things that you feel uncomfortable doing, and you're going to have to feel fine not going and doing
Absolutely.
Them.
Right. That's entirely true.
I don't mind the parade. You lost me at the photo area with, like, toilet paper and hand sanitizer. Like, I wouldn't want to commemorate that part of it. But, yeah, have a like, the parking lot of the school open. People can gather. You can kind of get some of that interaction with your fellow students and keep it at a safe distance and then move on.
I think something would have been even better if you could have, I think it started with the Getty Museum, the people reenacting art.
Yes.
Which I thought has been so fun and so creative. Like, why not make everyone make their prom out? Since they're not going anywhere to a fancy place, they have to make their prom outfit from something at home, something weird at home. Like, that's the type
DIY
of thing.
Prom.
Right. Exactly. That's the type of thing, because that would have been great photos. And I love to see people get super creative what they put together, including using the toilet paper, maybe, because that makes pretty good, you know, taffeta kind of material if you try. That's the type of thing I would have loved to have seen with, and I imagine it did happen in a lot of places.
I love that, and I think that there's a certain population that loves that, and then there's the other population that just wants it to be traditional.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
right.
You know, the super popular kids who are like, I've been waiting for this freaking moment. Yeah, I am not making my dress out of duct tape, which when I was in high school was like the cool thing to do.
Yeah. Really?
Was to use duct tape to make a whole outfit.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Those were like the theater kids.
Did you do this?
I didn't do that. No, I was too busy smoking weed to be creative. I got in a fight.
Maybe you just had a pizza boxes and Dorito bags.
Oh my God. Now I would have loved to. I got in a fight with my mom at Macy's, and then she said, I'm not buying your dress. And so to this day, I remember exactly how much my dress cost because I had to buy it myself. It was $113, which is quite expensive when you're 16.
Yeah, that is expensive.
And it was a Jessica McClintock dress, and I still regret wearing a strapless bra because there was a cutout, and you could see it through the cutout. Mm. You just have to let this out now. Mm.
Okay, we...
And I lost my virginity on prom night, if I may say.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Cornball. We only have a couple seconds. Prom theme slash song. Do you remember?
I only remember senior year. It was You Look Wonderful Tonight.
Solid.
By Eric Clapton, but I don't remember, like, colors, but it was at the Presidio in San Francisco, which was really cool.
Mm. Mike?
Oh, it's Journey.
It's Journey. It? That's
good
enough. Journey.
This is why yeah. I still have a Journey revulsion.
I do too.
What is it? Something touching, squeezing, to the chorus.
Oh,
I know the song. You know the song I'm talking about.
You've all heard it.
It's a slow dance song.
Of course it is.
It's a slow dance song because that's why Journey got played. Journey and Sticks. Lots of Journey and Sticks.
Touching, squeezing. This is like...
Good luck, Google.
Me too-ing.
Mine was, because it was 1999, it was My Heart Will Go On.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
I was very upset about that.
Journey, Lovin', Touchin', Squeezin'.
Is that the name of the song?
Yes.
There you go.
What?
Yes.
Well, all right.
Thank
no
you, Rachel.
G's. No G's that night.
And it has a crescendo. Of course it does.
Of course it does.
It's Journey.
Thanks, Rach.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rachel.
We'll be back. More Cairo Nights after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike. Text from 360. How dare you talk bad of Journey? They are incredible. Typical ungrateful millennials. Listen, I spent the break singing the praises.
I am about as post-millennial as you can get.
Yeah.
Still breathing.
I was singing the praises of Steve Perry.
You were? Well, not on air, though.
No, during the break. But that's
all they know.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the guy has a golden pipes. What are you going to do? Had golden pipes. I guess he doesn't quite have them anymore. But you know what? Good on him for throwing in the towel when is appropriate. I've seen too many of these guys who get up in age
but
lose
his
the voice.
His was more catastrophic than that. I mean, literally, like, especially if you listen to the range he had.
Yeah.
It would be, you couldn't do that unless you were incapable of doing that. It doesn't sound like Journey anymore.
No, right? No, it doesn't. So they find a guy in the Philippines who sounds exactly like him, and now he sings for Journey. I think that's a great story. 98973, where do you stand on all-you-can-eat buffets? Because we're about to talk about them here for just a minute. Turns out, buffets are in bad shape. I would say deservedly so, although I do have a soft spot in my heart for them. It turns out that
soft spot is just buildup.
Yes, it's plaque on my heart. Well, you throw in all you can eat my way, and I end up not being... You've seen me eat, Mike. It takes me 45 minutes to take about 3 bites.
Right.
I'm the world's slowest eater. And so buffets, I feel like I don't get my money's worth. I pay for all you can eat. I get through about maybe a plate and a half.
Right.
And then that's it for me.
That's actually better for your money than eating a whole bunch more.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, right. Saves on the medical expenses later. But it turns out that the company that owns Hometown Buffet, Old Country Buffet, and Ryan's, I'm unfamiliar with Ryan's, they have declared bankruptcy 3 times, and Golden Corral, though, they managed to skate by this thing. It looks like they're still doing okay. But with the coronavirus situation, people are becoming less and less keen on the idea of grabbing food from where other people have previously grabbed food.
Yeah, my guess is that if the buffet is going to survive, they are going to have to find some way. I mean, you really don't want somebody. You don't want the whole point of the buffet is that you don't have it staffed, right? because that's what saves you the money is making the food in bulk, and right. you don't have somebody serve. You do it's self service.
Right.
So that so if you wanted to stick to that model, my guess is you'd have to find some cheap, reusable or washable form of serving spoons that people would have to use as new every so they would step up mm-hmm. they would have one spoon they would keep all the way through or a couple they would keep all the way through serve that way and then drop those in a container a sudsy container at the end so they would all be cleaned and then recycled to the beginning because you would want to keep people's if you could keep people's hands off touching similar things and you had the sneeze guard in place and all of that you could probably get relatively well through it. But if you had everyone touching the same things as it exists now, like the pile of plates, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have some more problems.
I think people are just grabbing the food with their hands, too. I think you're being overly generous in assuming that everyone is going to use some sort of a spoon utensil to serve themselves.
Well, I think with the hand, like, I think with like rolls and whatnot, yeah, you see it all the time. They're not mm-hmm. using the tongs. So, but my guess, my hope is that there'll be a group of people who will be a little fearful. My hope also is that what we've been reading from the science about the contact from like its ability to stay viable on a surface is not and hopefully maybe on a Hawaiian roll you know? uh-huh. it proves invulnerable to the virus. I don't know, but my guess is that if I were running a buffet style place and there's not that many around anymore but there's mm-hmm. still plenty, I would have a measure of concern. I mean, I have a concern because what we do at the Streamline on Thanksgiving and on Christmas is a potluck.
I've been.
And it's terrific.
Yes.
And can you still do that? Do we suspend that this year? I was talking about that just the other day. I don't know. It's a chance for us to give back in the neighborhood, and anyone who doesn't have a place to go, they show up and we provide really good food. And so do our customers. It's kind of competitive with them. The food
yes.
is dynamite.
Yes.
So do we continue doing that? I mean, I love the idea of it, but I don't necessarily like its capacity to make this situation worse if it is still bad. I mean, we've got a little time between now. I don't need to make any decisions before November. And so hopefully by then we're feeling a little bit safer about it, but we'll probably have to change something or other about it.
I was also thinking about Indian restaurants because I don't know that I've been to many Indian restaurants and the majority of them have been buffets.
Right.
And that's just a whole sector that I think is known for being a buffet-style restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully if we get, you know, a vaccination or some level of immunity at some point, we do it now with flu seasons, and we probably catch it that way, too. Mm. So my hope is that we find a way through this. But you never know. It could be a business model. It's time is going away.
Coming up, Jim Brunner from the Seattle Times. He's going to talk to us about that fraud ring from Nigeria, Scattered Canary, and how they have taken advantage of Washington's unemployment system. It comes up next, Power Nights.